Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome into another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas. Week 10 recap coming at you right now. This was a pretty good week. You know, the games weren't necessarily the highest of profile all the way across the board. We got some pretty good matchups. The first one we're going to start with is going to be Kentucky and Auburn, so we're going to get that one out of the way. But a very consequential week. I think you're looking at Tennessee out of the playoff race. You're looking at Georgia really just scraping by. Vanderbilt, I think, showed us all something this week. And we got Dudes of the Week at the end of it. So let's just get right into it. Kentucky-Auburn. This has got to get out of the way. 10-3, Kentucky gets the win on the road, on the plains. This game couldn't have gone more like it profiled, or it was just a bunch of nothingness the entire time. Just two teams who really can't do it. Excuse me. Just one second. Sorry, I'm on Hugh Freeze watch today. Oh my goodness, it just happened. Hugh Freeze got fired. I'll be right back. All right, we're back. Emergency video for Hugh Freeze's firing has been made. I think I agree with it. Yeah, I posted the video, but I'll just to reiterate, like, I mean, losing record by a lot in the SEC since he's been there, losing record overall. He was supposed to come in as an offensive guy, you know, fix the offensive woes, get a great quarterback in there, and that never happened. You had Peyton Thorne, then you put all your chips into Jackson Arnold. You have him transfer in, thinking he can fix the offense, then you have to bench him for Ashton Daniels, who plays the exact same way. It was just broken. It didn't work, and I did think Auburn might have to wait just because of how competitive this coaching cycle is going to be until they only scored 3 points against Kentucky. That really changed that for me. I think it's the right move. It's never, there are times that are better than others to fire your head coach. It's very rare you get into a spot where, like, this is a great time to fire a coach, right? So you kind of have to deal with that. It's just part of the job. But Hugh Freeze out at Auburn, but Kentucky. Anyways, back to the regularly scheduled what I was going to talk about here. Cutter Bowley was 18-29 passing against Auburn for only 161 yards and just a score. He threw two picks. Ashton Daniels, 13 of 28 for 108 yards and a pick. That is not what Auburn wanted. Kentucky forced 7 sacks. Auburn just 2. This game doesn't deserve much more time. And in my note here, I said neither does Hugh Freeze. And it turns out that was correct. You can't keep saying that you're so close when you keep losing games, especially at home to inferior teams like Kentucky. Weren't they like an 11-point favorite in this game? Like, Auburn was just broken. It's a competitive carousel, but like I said, they have to just roll the dice. But now moving forward, Kentucky hosts Florida in a disgusting game, and Auburn has to go to Vanderbilt now without Hugh Freeze. DJ Durkin is their interim, their defensive coordinator, so we'll see how they fight coming out of that. Moving on, sorry, adrenaline is pumping after what just happened. That was the most intense thing I've ever been a part of. South Carolina went to Ole Miss and lost 30-14. Ole Miss outgained Carolina 417-230 in total yards. They outgained them on the ground 258-50. Chambliss was only 12-21 passing for only 159, had a pick and a touchdown. But Kewan Lacy ran for 167 yards with a touchdown. Chambliss ran for 50-plus and also a score. 6 sacks forced by that Ole Miss defense. Really had sellers in a blender. Had the whole Carolina offense sort of off kilter the entire time. And their leading rusher for Carolina was Roswell Faison, only at 52 yards. Sellers only threw for 180, a score and 2 picks. That Carolina offense is just broken. And this morning, before I was already doing a show, Mike Shula got fired as their offensive coordinator. So a change in Columbia. That wasn't Shane Beamer. I thought for a minute that you might see Beamer have to go, but he makes the move to get rid of Shula. So he'll buy himself some more time. Can you maybe find a spark for the rest of the year for Carolina? You have to go to A&M after a bye week, which is tricky, but then you host Coastal Carolina, you host Clemson. Can you finish off with wins in those two and kind of get a spark moving forward, try and retain some of your roster going into next year? We'll see how it goes. But Ole Miss, they host the Citadel next week, so they get an easy one before having Florida and Mississippi State to end their year. Feels like Ole Miss is, I don't want to say a lock to go to the playoff because I don't want this to come back on me. They're going to lose some bad games, but you feel really confident if you're in Oxford right now about Kiffin bringing Ole Miss to the playoff. And this game, it wasn't pretty. Ole Miss did not play a great game, I don't think, especially on offense. I think part of that was just kind of the letdown from that big win at Norman last week. But, you know, a win is a win. And good teams win, great teams cover. Ole Miss covered, much to my chagrin, because I had Carolina on my best bets. But a good win for Ole Miss and Kiffin to keep it going. Now they get to kind of wind down with the Citadel game and move forward. Carolina, big changes. You get a bye week to deal with it. Let's see if they can turn it around late in this year. Mississippi State went to Arkansas, won 38-35. The flags in this game are one of the most insane stats I've ever seen. Mississippi State had 4 penalties for just 30 yards. Arkansas was flagged 18 times for 193. I don't think I've ever seen that. Ever. I've watched a good bit of football. I'm only 22, but I've still watched a good bit of football. That is just an absurd flag differential. But this game had 52 points scored in the second half. I thought the whole game was going to feel like that. It's why the over was in one of my best bets. And luckily, it still was able to cash because of that second half. Just two really bad defenses and two offenses that can score pretty much at will when they're clicking. Blake Shapen threw for 242 and 2 touchdowns. Anthony Evans III and Brendan Thompson both eclipsed 100 yards receiving for the Bulldogs. Taylen Green, he only threw for 194, so he wasn't super efficient. Mike Washington Jr., though, for them, ran for 116. It's impossible to not feel horrible for Arkansas fans. It just feels like every game they lose, they're not just losing them. They're just heartbreakers. Giving up the touchdown at the end to lose this game to State, to stay 0-5 in the SEC, winless in conference, is just brutal. And now they have a bye week before they get up and go to Baton Rouge. How does LSU look? Because they'll be with a new coach. They're at Tuscaloosa this next week. Then they'll host Arkansas, so we'll see how they look. Mississippi State, they get to host Georgia. They get to play spoiler if they're able to get a win. Georgia is whistling by the graveyard. We'll talk about it in the Florida-Georgia preview. I'll do that one next. But Mississippi State, this team is not that bad. They're not that good, but they're not that bad either. And they can compete with anybody. We've seen it all season. So State, I do think, is dangerous to play spoiler down the stretch here to Georgia and also maybe to Ole Miss. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'll parlay that right into Florida-Georgia, this recap. 24-20 Georgia. I've talked about it on the show a few times. I am a Florida fan to a heavy degree. If you take a step back, this game was awesome. This was an awesome football game, awesome rivalry that really paid off. It really hurts. And from the Florida perspective of this loss, I'm not jumping on the referee train at all. Because rather than saying if this was called this way, here are 4 more important ifs. If DJ Lagway hits Tank Hawkins late in the second quarter, he scores on that play. That little corner out that Lagway overthrew him, 17-7 in the locker room if that throw was made. If the Gators don't have Miles Graham covering Zachariah Branch and Mann on a 3rd and long late in that game, get a stop, get the ball back, still winning. If the 4th and short call for Florida late was a quarterback sneak or a tush push instead of a shotgun handoff, because they wanted to run Lagway all day, but they didn't want to do it in a 4th and short where that doesn't put the game away, but it puts you in a much better spot. And then if Lagway gets the ball to J. Michael Sturdivant on that deep shot, the controversial catch, no catch, or hits the guy who was wide open at midfield. I think it was Trey Wilson. If you go back on that replay, like Georgia has 3 defenders in the middle. JMS is back here, and Trey is over here. They're both wide open. So those are the ifs you have to look at if you're Florida. Don't say if it was called a catch. Because if the ball just gets there, it's a catch. If he just sees Trey in the middle of the field, it's a big first down. There are more ifs for Florida that go way beyond the refs that contribute to why they lost this game the way they did. But Georgia, man, they just keep closing games out when it feels like they're not going to do it. Gunnar Stockton played very well. The pick was not his fault. That hit Noah Thomas in the hands. He played really sharp. Chauncey Bowens, 9 carries for 70 yards and a score. And Zachariah Branch is such an issue. He is such a good playmaker out wide. 10 catches for 112 yards. DJ Lagway had just 166 pass yards with a touchdown. Jaden Ball had a solid day. 15 carries for 72 yards and a score. Only 3 wide receivers had a catch for Florida. And Dallas Wilson only had 1 before he left the game with an injury. Now, having Vernell Brown III, Aiden Mizell, and Dallas Wilson all banged up, I mean, it made it impossible for a diversified passing attack for the Gators. And you really saw that sting. I mean, Trey Wilson had a great day, but if he's really the only threat, Georgia has the players and the smarts, obviously, just kind of just take him away and tell DJ, look, go somewhere else with the ball. And he really couldn't, not even breaking 200 yards in the air. And one more thing I have. There was the video of DJ Lagway after the game on the field, you know, smiling, chopping it up with Georgia players. I don't want to sit here and be like saying, don't have sportsmanship. Don't be, kind after the game. Don't, try to be able to dissociate from on the field to off the field. Because I respect that. I like that a lot. The camera panned after the game. Trey Wilson is sobbing on the sidelines, being consoled by the coaches. Like, that's the emotion that, as a Florida fan, I want to see from Gator players after any heartbreaking loss, especially after a loss like that to Georgia in a season like you're having. Like, losing does not impact, it's not just a Florida issue, losing does not impact a lot of players the way that we used to see it happen. If you want to be great, you have to hate losing more than you love winning. And that has kind of been taken away from, I guess it's from how much players can move around. Now it's hard to build allegiances to one school, understand rivalries, because you're getting paid millions of dollars if you are Lagway. So it's like, yeah, we lost, but, check's coming next week. That's been kind of taken away. I wish there was that fire, just that intensity of, if we lose this game, like, it's like a meltdown. Like, we had, the emotional investment is gone. Not totally gone, but it's not the same as we've seen in the past. And I wish that there was more of that emotion, because if I had seen Lagway after that game pissed off, emotional, I'd feel better about the rest of the season. Like, okay, maybe Florida did somewhat find something, go win some games later in the year. I don't want to say he's complacent, because I do believe Lagway is a great competitor, but I didn't see enough fire. I didn't see enough heartbreaks, enough emotion from him at the end of that game. So just moving on now, Georgia goes to Starkville, tricky spot, just talked about it, we'll preview it later in the week, and Florida goes to Kentucky. That game is disgusting. That game is so disgusting. I'll touch on it this week as a preview, but man, that game sucks. Moving on, Vandy at Texas, 34-31 Texas. What an effort by Vandy. They were one set of stronger hands on that onside kick away from either being able to put themselves in a field goal position to go to overtime or just air one out to win the game. But was this Texas' best game to date? I think you could argue that it was. 428 total yards. Arch was 25 of 33, throwing for 328 and three scores. Wisner was solid on the ground, 18 carries for 75 yards and a touchdown. And Ryan Wingo was an issue before. I think it seemed like he dislocated one of his fingers in the first quarter. But he had the big play on the first snap of the game for that touchdown. He looked explosive. The anti-Diego Pavia folks took this game as a chance to take a victory lap on him, because he lost to Texas on the road. I mean, what are you talking about if that's the stance that you're taking? Pavia was 27 of 38 passing for 365 and three touchdowns, ran for 43 yards and a score against Texas on the road. Blake Shapen is the only other quarterback to throw more than that. He had him for 381 at home. Julian Sayin, who is now completing 80% of his passes in that Ohio State offense, Sayin's the Heisman favorite. He only threw for 126 at home. Lagway, in Florida's best game against Texas, tossed for 298. This was an awesome game from Diego Pavia. That Texas defense is elite. They're full of playmakers. Colin Simmons was in his grill all day. And Pavia never blinked. He just kept producing. He kept moving the ball. And it came down to Texas, this game, just being filled with five stars, while Vandy just not being filled with five stars. Like, this, that was just a classic game of this team. They're a step above this team. A is better than B. And A won at home. So now Texas, they get a bye before they go to Athens to try and keep their playoff hopes alive still. And Vanderbilt, they host Auburn, who now is going to have a new coach. But I think that also just this comeback for Vandy was big for their playoff resume, because if they're able to win out now, you look at 10-2, they won't go to Atlanta, but you're not going to have a 20-point loss on your resume. You're going to have a loss by a field goal on the road at a Texas team who is good. Their offense has looked bad sometimes. Texas is Texas. I hate saying quality loss. I do. But losing that game only by three is not that bad of a performance. It's just not, because you covered the spread. You do what you're supposed to do. You covered the spread. But I think that comeback was big for Vandy's playoff hopes. They still have to win out, obviously, and then they'll still be on the bubble. But Vandy, that was a hell of a showing to come out and not blink and not quit when you were down by 17 or 21, however bad it got. So that was a big one. And then game of the week in the SEC, Oklahoma at Tennessee, 33-27 Oklahoma. Welcome back to a box score from hell. Tennessee had 9 more first downs, 28-19 in that department. They had 456 total yards. Oklahoma only had 351. Oklahoma was flagged 11 times for 104 yards. Tennessee just 3 flags for 25 yards. But sound the alarm, because Oklahoma just outrushed an opponent. They had 35 carries for 192 yards compared to 35 carries for only 63 for Tennessee, 5.5 yards per carry to just 1.8. And John Mattier didn't really do anything special through the air. I think he only had like 160, 187 passing yards, but the ground game was moving. Torrey Blaylock got benched for Xavier Robinson, and Robinson went 16 for 115 yards, 7.2 yards per carry, and a score. John Mattier carried the ball 16 times for 80 yards, 5 yards per carry, and a score. R. Mason Thomas, man, Superman scoop and score on that play that ended up knocking him out of the game, but Oklahoma's defense had 4 sacks and 8 TFLs total. My Joey Aguilar agenda, I don't like doing braggy stuff, taking the victory lap. Guys, he's going to produce a ton. He is going to throw the game away in big spots. He is. Tennessee fans can get mad at me all they want for, oh, it's not his fault, you know, he's throwing the receiver. If your quarterback is throwing picks, your quarterback is throwing picks. He threw 2 at the end of the first half that swung the game by at least a possession. In a game, he only lost by 6. I mean, he threw for 393 and 3 touchdowns. That is great. And he didn't have much running game to help him. Only 1.8 yards per carry for the team. Oklahoma's defense did step up there. But if you're Tennessee, you're looking at Aguilar like, dude, you're producing well. You've got to stop throwing the ball to the other team. I mean, throwing that ball away at the end of the half to give Oklahoma 3 more points is inexcusable. And the first pick was just a bad read in the double coverage. If you're looking at Aguilar as somebody who can be explosive and lead your team to keep scoring points, like, that's great. He'll do that. If he's throwing the ball to the other team, you're going to lose games. You lost to Georgia, you almost lost to Mississippi State, and now you've lost to Oklahoma because those are multi-pick games from Joey Aguilar. You lost to Bama in large part because of that pick six at the end of the half, which was just a horrible throw. Aguilar is going to put up good numbers. He's a talented guy. If he's good, he throws the ball away. That's it. He throws the ball away. But moving forward, Tennessee, they get a bye and then a home game versus New Mexico State. Oklahoma, they also... Does Oklahoma have a bye before Bama? I think they do. Oklahoma gets a bye, and then they go to Tuscaloosa. Another massive game for Oklahoma trying to keep their playoff hopes alive. But that was a massive win for the Sooners and pretty big for my future bets because I had Oklahoma to win 4 conference games and Tennessee get to go under 8.5 for their win total. So that helped me. That helped me very good. Winding up the show here with Dudes of the Week. The first Dude of the Week is the ref in the Texas Vandy game. I don't know if anyone saw this clip, but... He was under the end zone, I think it was after a field goal attempt or something. He takes a handoff from the ball boy in perfect form, immediately puts his foot in the ground and hits through the B gap. Just a football guy. I love seeing that from an official where he wants to be part of the game. He's locked in. Dude of the week for the ref in Texas Vandy. And then I have 2 Oklahoma guys, which kind of feels I shouldn't have 2 Oklahoma guys, but first one is R. Mason Thomas. That scoop and score was Herculean. I mean, a 30-yard stiff arm, and then he finishes the play on a bum hamstring, being able to stay in bounds. Game-changing score, obviously a game-changing play, but R. Mason Thomas, that toughness earns him Dude of the Week. And then Tate Sandell, Oklahoma's kicker, the shortest shorts in the game, sunk a 55-yarder, 51-yarder, 40-yarder, and another 55-yarder. Just ice cold to do that in Neyland in a blackout spot. And all those field goals were massive spots. Like that last 55-yarder, that was to make it a 9-point lead late. Like those, they weren't just kicks. They were massive clutch-time kicks that Sandell made. So Dude of the Week goes to Tate Sandell, R. Mason Thomas, and the unnamed ref in Texas Vandy. That'll do it for the Week 10 recap. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you did enjoy this video, you did enjoy the recap, you want to see some more of our preview stuff, a bunch of content throughout the week, please subscribe. Doing this 24/7. I've been Will Thomas. Thank you so much for watching this episode.